You're just seconds away from a two-part conversation with Congresswoman Cindy Axne, who represents the 16 counties in the 3rd Iowa Congressional District. The reason we're in two parts is because, hey, there's so much to talk about, including the notion that nothing is being done in Washington that's simply not accurate. You're just a click away from having that false narrative being tossed out. Cindy Axne, next.
A proud sponsor of Insight on Business, the NewsHour, is AARP Iowa. With over 370,000 members, AARP is helping families with a host of programs, from Fraud Watch to helping build more livable communities. Learn more at aarp.org.
Welcome back to the Business News Hour. We have a returning guest. The last time that Congresswoman Cindy Axne was a guest on the Business News Hour was when she wasn't a congresswoman. She was recently elected to Iowa's 3rd Congressional District in 2018, and we're sitting in her office in Des Moines. Cindy, welcome back to the Business News Hour. Good to see you again, sir.
You too. Glad to be here.
Wow. That was quick. I mean, really, about a year ago now, we sat down at Vino 209, I think it is, in West Des Moines, had lunch, and talked about campaigning. And here we are, relatively months after you've taken office, and you're talking about campaigning.
Yeah, it's a never-ending process when you're in a congressional seat, a House of Representatives, in a two-year term.
Right.
Literally, you're campaigning from about the minute you win your election, which is a really bad part of the system, and quite honestly, why we passed things like H.R. 1 to take dark money out of politics. It costs too much to run races anymore, and we shouldn't be spending our time constantly having to run for re-election.
You know, that's an interesting side note there. One of the things, the House of Representatives has always been the body that is every person. You know, it's always been, our framers said, hey, look, we don't want folks to make a career, long career out of this. We want people to come and put their input in and really represent their constituency. And you know, now, with all this dark money and corporate PAC money and all of those things that go on, you know, it's costing thousands and thousands and thousands, millions of dollars to run for Congress.
Mine was the most expensive congressional race in Iowa's history. I raised $5.2 million. That was before any of the outside expenditures came in.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a lot of money to run these races. But, you know, listen, I'm in this to make life better for all Iowans. So if I've got to do everything I can to do good in my official capacity but stay reelected, that's what I'm going to do.
So one of the things that I remember you saying on the campaign trail just a year ago was that you were going to Washington to represent everybody. It didn't matter much if they're an R, D, or I. Is that pretty accurate? You doing that?
Listen, I really think that I am, and I truly believe that. We're all in this together. Iowa is a state that relies heavily on each other, whether you live in a rural or urban area, and we need to make sure that we value what we all bring to the table and that we pass policy that helps all of us. I think I've told you before, and I know you've heard me say, if everybody does well, then everybody does well. So my objective has been to represent anybody. Doesn't matter what letters behind your name, a D, R, L, or I. My objective has been to represent urban and rural, and I think we're seeing that with the relief that I found with our flood victims, as well as the work that I'm doing to press back against the president and this administration on the issues that are facing our agriculture community, especially all the waivers out of our biofuels so that big oil doesn't have to purchase ethanol, which is killing our farmers and putting more money in the pockets of already rich big oil shareholders.
Yeah, I want to dial on that for just a moment. One of the things that the ethanol waivers were always supposed to do was to help small refineries, right? That was the idea. And there were X amount of waivers that were allowed, small refineries. But this administration, from what I understand, is giving waivers to Exxon and anybody that's got a refinery. And that was never meant to be that way, was it?
No, it was never meant to be that way. And as a matter of fact, during Obama's, basically both terms, they issued 10 waivers, 10 in 8 years. We've seen 81 waivers since this president started. And so the last round came with 31 more additional waivers, which, by the way, we believe he actually intervened in to move those forward. We know that the Department of Energy did not approve some of those waivers, and we're going to get to the bottom of this because the objective is to, you know, advance ethanol production here in Iowa and only to allow renewable fuel standard waivers for businesses where it would be an economic hardship. Well, let me tell you, Chevron, Exxon, I don't think they're facing any economic hardship, but I sure know that our Iowa farmers are.
Yeah, they are. And let's spend a moment on that, if we can. For folks that are listening to this, and they're going, okay, well, so what is this ethanol waiver thing, and what is the impact that it has? What is the impact that it has on our farmers in the 3rd District and across Iowa?
Well, so essentially, there's a specific amount of ethanol production that is supposed to be used by those big fossil fuel companies to blend in with their fossil fuel, with their oil. And so when we've waived out now 4 billion gallons of that, which quite honestly is about 25 to 30% of the renewable fuel standard. Mm. So when we wave out that much volume, we wave out bushels of corn. When we wave out bushels of corn, because that's what it takes to produce ethanol, then we've waved out 25 to 30% of the business that our farmers here in Iowa get. So this has had a direct impact on them. And as a matter of fact, I was just in Powett in Corning not too long ago.
Sure.
They're having to cut their production in half and lay people off. And we are seeing plants close down around the nation. So we know that it's absolutely impacting ethanol production. By the way, there's ethanol production in other states that aren't big corn states. So they're purchasing corn from Iowa when they don't have a supply string as well. When they don't have customers, then they don't need our corn as a supply. So we're
losing
like
a triple barrel
yeah.
threat. Not only are prices down, but you can't sell the stuff or for ethanol utilization, and our exports now are taking it in the shorts, especially soybean farmers.
Yeah? Absolutely. Yeah, soybeans are down 25%. We don't know where we're going to recover that market. I mean, all folks within the business who are experts believe that we'll recoup about 15% of the market over a decade. And then, you know, keep in mind, that's over a decade, but we still don't know we're going to get the rest of it.
Let's talk a little bit about, again, because I really do enjoy the agricultural conversation. That's part of my roots. And I think it's so important for individuals in urban areas to understand what's going on with our cousins, if you will, who are living in rural America. Can you share a story or two about your farmers that you're talking to out there and what they're telling you?
No, absolutely. And I want everybody to, you know, really understand how valuable agriculture is to our entire state's economy. One in every $5 is produced from agriculture. We're not just talking about farmers. We're talking about folks also right here in the Des Moines area that work for John Deere, that work for Corteva. And, you know, we're talking about pickup truck dealers. We're talking about small cafes. This is impacting our entire economic structure in this state. And when 20% of our economy is produced through agriculture, we've got to pay attention to it. One of the earliest calls that I took from a constituent was a farmer who was dealing with these trade wars and said, listen, I don't know if my family would be better off with my insurance policy than having me around. This is a father of four, a fifth generation farmer, believes that he will be the last generation, and sometimes wonders if his family's better off not having him around because they'd get insurance money. That's how bad this is. And as a matter of fact, I told Vice President Pence that story because I said, I don't think the president even comprehends what's happening here to the people on the ground. So we're seeing folks who, you know, can't afford to pay their operating loans. We know that within our banking system, there are more loans going to a special status. And when that happens, that means those farms will be foreclosed upon. So what we're seeing is another example of this administration really impacting those family farms in Iowa. It's tough on everybody, but it's certainly a lot easier for some of the larger farms that aren't owned by Iowans to manage through this. Who it's really hurting are those family farms in Iowa.
And those people that shop in Atlantic or Redfield or wherever it happens to be, Red Oak, you know, those are the people in the main streets of those communities that are now being impacted greatly.
Absolutely. Now, absolutely.
We're with Cindy Axne, Congresswoman Cindy Axne. She represents the 3rd Congressional District. Before we get into some other policy things, I just have to ask the question, what's been the biggest surprise for you about going to Washington?
Oh, my gosh, Michael, there's been so many. I would say the biggest surprise to me has been the inability to find folks across the aisle to work with. I had high hopes going out there that there would be people that we could find that opportunity.
Well, it's the Iowan way, isn't it?
Well, it's the Iowan way, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, I thought, well, with my Republican colleagues, who a lot of them represent rural areas, we'd find that opportunity. I couldn't find one person to work on a rural health care bill with me. So, you know, it's really, I truly believe that there is a top-down push to say don't work with your Democratic colleagues because we don't want them to have any success. And I don't look at this about me being successful with policy. I look at this about introducing policy that helps people, not just in my district in this state, but to other communities like Iowa across this country. And we should all be working with each other to make sure that any bills that support states like Iowa, who is rural and urban and who doesn't get a lot of the support that some of these other states do, like California and New York, when it comes to economic opportunity, that we'd find ways to work together. So I'm disappointed that we're not at that place.
It does remind us a bit of what Mitch McConnell said in the U.S. Senate, that nothing was going to get by him.
Oh, he's made that clear.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely clear. All right, let's talk about some accomplishments that you feel have been beneficial for residents in Iowa, and in particular, the 3rd District.
Listen, I've passed a lot of bills to address the issues around putting more money back in people's pockets, providing opportunity with trade schools and apprenticeship programs, and certainly reducing the cost of people's health care. As you mentioned, we're waiting for some of those bills to get to the Senate. Mitch McConnell is not taking very many things up, so I would encourage everybody to press your senators to encourage Mr. McConnell to pass these bills. We just passed out of House 3 bills to lower the cost of prescription drugs. Obviously, one of the biggest issues we're facing in this country. And right now, we have a situation where Big Pharma can really control what's on the market and how much they're charging. And they've done this through being able to remain patent holders and not allow generics to the market. So we wrote a bill to close that loophole. But we also found out that generics work in cahoots with Big Pharma as well, so that you bring just one generic to the market and not the others. What happens then is that they're able to put in place prices that work for both of them, the Big Pharma and that one generic, but it means prices still remain high because we need to have at least 3 generics on the market to force competition. So we wrote 3 bills to address that. We're waiting for those to get to the Senate and make that happen so that we can put more money back in the pockets of the people in this district.
So that one issue is a major issue all across the United States, with the cost of drugs, so much so that people are going to Canada to buy their drugs. And so when people say that Congress isn't doing anything, maybe that's not quite accurate.
That's not quite accurate. As a matter of fact, we've passed almost 500 bills since I started in January. 500 bills, folks, all to help people live better lives and have opportunity. We just finished the appropriations bills, and we've put those in the hands of the Senate now, because the last thing that we as Democrats want is to go into another government shutdown. So we are giving them ample time to work on what we believe is a strong budget for next year. Secondly, I've been working on bringing opportunity to everybody on its way through the House at this point, our trade school and apprenticeship programs, to increase the opportunity for kids to come out and earn a good living. And that's by developing a pipeline between K through 12 schools and businesses in the area. We've tried that in the past, and this is something that we've done at state level, I think across the country, but it's not getting the traction that it needs. The federal government believes that, you know, we believe that we've got an opportunity to help with that. So we're stepping in to help create that pathway. You know, we're working on extending Pell Grants so that kids can have an opportunity to, you know, use those credits that they've got and take those further down the road to improve their ability to earn a good living. So we're working heavily on the aspect of, you know, making sure that those kids can get off on the right foot. I'm looking directly at student loans, for gosh sake. I sit on the Financial Services Committee, and my bill passed out of House Financial Services and then through the House floor to do a pilot program that will roll student loan debt into a home mortgage. And so this would be to purchase, you know, federally owned homes, so homes that have been repossessed, but great homes in many cases, that in most cases, young people with massive student loans wouldn't even be able to get a home mortgage. This allows them to roll their student loan into that home mortgage at a much lower rate, and also gives them an opportunity to purchase a home, which with, when you normally have that much debt outlaid, most banks aren't looking at you. So I'm working on all these angles.
Let me touch on that for just a moment, because I think that's brilliant, actually. When a person borrows money from the federal government for their school loans, that rate of interest is significantly higher than what the current mortgage rate interest is.
Correct.
Right now. And you can't negotiate that. Is that right?
That's correct. That's correct.
So if you roll this into a first mortgage or something like that, that would automatically drive your payments down.
Absolutely. By multiple percentage points.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And keep in mind, most people who are getting college loans are still doing it through a bank at very astronomical rates.
Yeah. It is. And this is one of the things that has continued to be a driver on jobs affordability and becoming really reflective of the overall economy as we start to, unfortunately, slow down. We're going to take a quick break because I knew this would happen. There's so much to discuss with you, Congresswoman Axne, that and I've got several things I want to talk about. I want to talk about health care, education, you just touched on that, infrastructure and jobs. And I also want to talk a bit about aging issues because I think in the 3rd District we've got some things that are in front of us. And are you able to stick around for a little bit?
Absolutely. Always for you, Mike.
Cindy Axne, ladies and gentlemen. She is Congresswoman Cindy Axne, a real Iowan that went to Washington, D.C., as she says, to represent everybody. We'll be back with part 2 in just a moment. Once again, that was part 1 with Congresswoman Cindy Axne, who represents Iowa's 3rd Congressional District. You can click ahead for part 2, and yeah, there's more to come. Thanks for listening.